programs you tuned to yesterday, delivering programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Mystery in this hour, later on from Mr. Keen, Tracer of Lost Persons, but first, Jack Webb stars as Jeff Regan Investigator in The Case of the Lost Lady, a CBS episode from October 16th, 1948.
My name's Regan. I get 10 a day on expenses from a detective bureau run by a guy named Anthony J. Lyon. They call me the Lion's Eye.
With Jack Webb as Jeff Regan Investigator, stand by for hard-boiled action and mystery and thrilling adventure in tonight's story of The Lost Lady.
Find it in Hollywood, jammed in between Van Ness and Wilton, right off the boulevard, Taft Avenue. Starts at a furniture store, runs for about a block, and then crosses Franklin. What happens to it after that, I don't know. I only go as far as the gray apartment building on the even number side, about the first thing you see. Figures that the guy who built my place never read the earthquake laws. A good crap game and shake it loose. Well, that's where I live. Apartment 308, in the back, where I can keep an eye on a brass drain pipe and a tired-out palm tree. I got a coffee pot and a bed that comes out of the wall. It isn't much, but the phone company had to have an address. That's where I was last Monday night, about 8 o'clock. Some Cleveland fans were running up a house tab in the apartment above me when the phone rang. I thought it might be somebody from Boston. It was the Lion.
Regan. I'm calling you from the office. I stayed late tonight.
You should have joined the union.
We got a new client.
Yeah?
Her name's Isabel Sanchez. I just talked to her.
Did you make a date?
She flew in from Mexico City tonight on American Airlines. She needs help.
They're saying that about the Democrats.
Comes from a fine family. Lots of influence in Mexico.
Try the State Department.
She came all the way to Los Angeles to see her sister, but she's disappeared.
Did you tell her about the Missing Persons Bureau?
I told her about you.
What do you mean?
You're going to find her sister.
I'm no Saint Bernard.
You'll do till I can feed one. Besides, she could go to the Mexican Council if she wanted to.
What's that got to do with it?
Remember the Pan American Conference? We gotta be nice to this dame.
Yeah, well, don't make up a contract.
I already did. She gave me $200.
What else did you get?
She'll tell you the rest.
Don't you ever ask questions.
That's your job. She's got a room at the Belmont. Hop over there and see her. She's expecting you to find her sister.
Is that all?
That's enough. Call me after you talk to her.
I hope her check bounces.
Don't worry. She paid cash.
Well, you can tell that the Lion only stayed in school long enough to learn how to spell dollar. It took me about 20 minutes to get over to her hotel. Isabel Sanchez had a room on the sixth floor. I found it on the Wilshire side. 610 it was. She was a tall, blonde girl, not the least bit pretty. She had a mouthful of good-looking teeth, but she never learned how to use them in a smile.
You're Mr. Regan?
That's right.
Come in. Please excuse me. I'm still unpacking. Come in.
All right.
I'm so glad you're here. I suppose Mr. Lyon told you everything.
Your sister's missing. You want to talk to me?
Yes. Oh, it's terrible. An awful vacant feeling. I was so looking forward to seeing Carmen again. We were very close.
You talk like you don't expect to see her.
Something might have happened to her.
Like what?
I don't know. She's always been so independent and, well, strange.
Well, a lot of people have their own ideas.
I'm embarrassed telling you this.
You've got to tell somebody.
Well, Carmen left home against my father's wishes.
How old is Carmen?
22.
What was the guy's name?
What do you mean?
Oh, come on. I got to have it all, lady. There was a man in it.
Yes. Martin Chambers.
From here in L.A.?
Carmen met him once in Mexico City. Thought she was in love with him.
When was this?
A year ago.
She followed him back.
Yes.
He took a long time to catch up.
I've been very concerned about Carmen. I received this letter from her a few days ago. It was the first word since she left home. Here.
Uh-huh.
You can see it's not much. She asked me to come here. I took the first plane.
Uh-huh. What about this address?
There's no such place. I went there right from the airport.
Who sent you to us?
You're in the phone book.
Is that all you got?
Well, I have a picture. isn't very good. Just a snapshot here.
Mm-hmm. Blonde, huh?
A little darker than mine. She's the same height. We wore each other's clothes.
Who else did she know?
Just Martin Chambers. Oh, no. Now, wait a minute. She mentioned a Dr. Menlo in her letter.
Did she need a doctor?
She just said he'd been very kind to her.
That isn't very much to go on.
I know, but you will follow every lead.
Yeah, sure. What are you scared of?
Why do you ask that?
It's a warm night. You got the shakes.
I had a long trip.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. You know this Chambers?
Yes.
You like him?
No.
What's that you got there in your hand?
An evening gown. Why?
You didn't bring that for me. Well, our story was smooth, but the clothes didn't fit. All the labels that showed said New York City. I went downstairs to a phone booth, and I got a hold of a friend of mine in the CAA. He checked into it, and he told me that nobody named Isabel Sanchez came in on that Mexico City flight. The whole thing looked phony, like a fan dancer in long underwear. Well, it was about 11 o'clock when I got over to the Lion's place. It was a cold night, but the Lion looked warm.
What do you want, Regan? I'm busy.
So am I. I've been looking at that Sanchez dame.
Tell me about it in the morning.
No, I'm going to tell you about it right now. It's no good.
What do you mean?
It's another bum client.
She gave me $200.
Her clothes are out of New York.
Maybe she came the long way.
She didn't come in on American.
So she's got a donkey. All you got to do is find her sister.
Look, I just told you she's a phony.
Let me worry about that.
Well, you can start now. Here.
What's this?
The letter and the picture. That's all the lead I got.
Now, wait a minute, Regan. What about our contract?
New Year's is coming up. You'll need confetti.
I can't do a thing like that. We got a moral obligation.
And $200.
I'm thinking of our reputation. I've given our word.
Take it back.
That girl's a stranger in a foreign land. She came to us for help.
Oh, stop it, will you? If there was a quarter in the bay, you'd drop your mother overboard and tell her to hold her nose.
You're getting out of line, Regan.
If she came up with kelp, you'd ring her out for iodine.
That's enough. We got a case and you're going to handle it.
You're going to handle it. I quit.
And I know this girl looks suspicious, but we have to give our clients the benefit of the doubt.
Why didn't you send her to missing persons?
I'll keep this picture and check with them first thing in the morning. You follow up that Menlo in the letter.
Well, a guy named Chambers has got priority.
Who's that?
The girl's got a love story.
It's getting cold out here. Check me in the morning.
I'll do that.
Remember, Regan, we always work hand in hand.
Yeah, that's why I never wear a ring. Well, it was too late to do anything else, so I went home and pulled that bed out of the wall. The next morning, I found a Martin Chambers listed in the city directory with an address on Laurel. It turned out to be a two-story apartment building about the color of a bride's blush, and it was wrapped around a swimming pool the size of a birdbath. Chambers' name wasn't on the mailbox, but a skinny guy with a load of bedsheets told me I could find the manager in apartment 15. When she answered the door, her voice sounded like a beer truck in low gear.
Hello, Sonny. Looking for an apartment?
You got one?
Nope. Come on in. Having some coffee. You want some?
No, I'll pass.
You don't know me, do you?
I just got here.
I played the Palace in 26. Ah, them was the days.
Write it up and sell it to the movies.
Damn slobs. Central Casting had called me in 4 years.
You got a card?
AFRA, SAG, and the Musicians Union. I play French horn. None of them call me. I figure it's a record band.
I'll talk to Petrillo.
I hate this dump. A third husband gave it to me. By the way, what are you doing here, Sonny?
I'm looking for a man named Martin Chambers.
What do you want him for?
Talk to him.
Cop?
No.
The day that guy moved in, I had him pegged for a gigolo. His hair was too curly.
Some women like that.
Not me. I used to have to chase him around the swimming pool to get his rent.
You're using the past tense. Where is he now?
Forest Lawn.
That's one way to break a lease.
He got boozed up about 6 months ago and drove off Malibu Pier. Took him 3 days to fish him out.
Straighten his hair?
Yeah, it sure did. Oh, wait a minute here. I kind of like you, Sonny. You get around, don't you?
Yeah, when the weather's good.
Ever run into Louis B?
No, not yet.
If you do, mention my name, will you?
What is it?
Just say that Goldie McMasters was asking for him. He'll remember old Goldie.
How could he forget?
Palace in 26.
Mm-hmm. When I left, she was thumbing through an old variety. She looked unhappy, like a banjo player with a paper pick. Well, what she told me about Chambers took the leading man out of the picture, but there was a bit player named Menlo. Well, I called the office of a Paul Menlo, but they said he wasn't in that day, so I drove out to his address in Encino. was a ranch house poured all over the top of a hill. From the looks of the place, Dr. Menlo must have been getting over ceiling for his cough drop. I parked my car by the gate and followed the flagstones up to the front door. When I pressed a button, I heard something that sounded like chamber music. The door opened in the middle of the second chorus.
Good morning.
I want to see Dr. Menlo.
Your name, please?
Regan.
You'll have to call the doctor's office, Mr. Regan.
I already did.
And they must have told you the doctor doesn't see any patients at his home.
Yeah, well, I'm not sick.
Keep it up and you will be. Beat it, Pilgrim.
No, I came here to see the doctor.
He don't want to see you.
Get your hands off me, punk.
Once I hit a guy in the ear, it busted his leg.
Mac,
I can handle this guy, Vicky.
Stop that. Get out, Mac.
I'll be in the back if you want.
You ever been a referee?
I've been a lot of things. Come in, Mr. Regan. I apologize for him. He's so eager. Isn't this better?
Well, everybody's eager now.
Anxious is a better word. I like blue serge. It has an effect on me.
You're the doctor's helper?
I hold his stethoscope. My name is Vicky Starr.
I'd like to see him.
He's busy.
Where do I wait?
Might be quite a while. He just opened the bottle.
Well, then I'm right on time.
Paul's not sociable like me. He drinks alone. He gets more that way. Let me entertain you.
What can you do?
Watch.
Oh, no, no. Easy, baby. I don't know how to fix a fracture.
I've already got a man that can do that. I want one with brains.
What's the matter with the doctor?
He keeps his in cold storage. Hasn't used him for a long time now.
Oh, I don't know. He's done all right.
This place? He'd be selling papers if his wife hadn't left him a good insurance policy.
Don't you like his money?
Don't get me wrong. I like being secure, but the girl has feelings, too.
Mm-hmm. They're beginning to show.
I'm glad I met you.
Why?
We're going to have some nice afternoons.
It's football season.
I have some free time. Ought to hear me on the piano, for instance.
No, I don't sing.
I'll teach you. Paul says I should have an outside interest.
Well, keep looking. You'll find one.
You smile good, but you talk nasty.
You started this conversation, sis.
Max is still in the kitchen.
I came here to see Menlo.
You didn't say what about.
I'll tell him.
There's the phone. Call and make an appointment.
Yeah, I'll be...
Hello, Vicky. Who is it this time?
His name's Regan. He hasn't got a business card.
Yeah, Max, throw him out.
You Dr. Menlo?
Yeah, should I turned all my patients over to another doctor.
Yeah, well, I know one you forgot.
Tell me who.
Carmen Sanchez.
Go ahead, Vicky. I'll talk to him.
Watch yourself, Paul. He doesn't know how to be nice.
It'll only take a minute.
I'll crack the mic.
Good nurse.
She's out of uniform.
We're casual. You said I had a patient named Carmen Sanchez. Who told you that?
Somebody she knew.
Your relative?
Friend.
You heard some wrong information, mister. I never heard of Carmen Sanchez.
I read about you in a letter.
Must have been another Menlo.
No, there's only one with a license.
You peaked, too. 25 a day?
10. I work for another guy.
Who?
Lion.
Lion's eye. Okay. You're still at the wrong house.
You want to show me your files?
Why not? Come on.
Okay.
And keep a duplicate at home. Help yourself. Want a drink?
Too early.
You don't mind if I have one?
No.
Anything?
Not under Sanchez, no.
Now, do you believe me?
She could have used another name.
Got any ideas?
Blonde girl, 5'4", brown eyes.
Means nothing.
Did you ever know a man named Chambers?
Yeah. In high school, back in Denver. Drove a truck.
Well, that doesn't help.
I'm sort of retired now.
Yeah, that's what Vicky said.
Nice girl. Talks to everybody. You satisfied?
Not yet.
Don't mention it. Always glad to help out. There's easier ways to make a living.
Yeah, I haven't got a wife with an insurance policy.
A year ago, I'd have broke you in half for that. Now, it doesn't matter. You can find the door.
I'll be back.
Don't bother, Regan. Doctor will be out.
I left him sitting there with a glass of rye in his hand. It wasn't much of an interview, but there was a story somewhere. What Menlo didn't have in his files, he was keeping in his head, and figured he might open up if I showed him that snapshot in the letter. Well, I drove back to town. I put in a call to the Lion. Nobody answered at the office, so I went home. When I opened my door, I caught a load of taboo. Isabel Sanchez was wearing a dress she must have put on with a shoehorn.
You've got the nicest janitor. He thinks I'm your sister.
Where'd you meet him?
He was in the lobby when I came in. I've been waiting for you.
Yeah, well, we got an office, you know.
No one answered when I rang. I wanted to be sure and see you before I left.
Taking a trip?
I leave for Mexico City first thing in the morning.
Well, it was a short visit.
It was long enough.
What about your sister?
That's what I came here to tell you. I found Carmen.
Oh, you did?
Or rather, Carmen found me. I feel foolish now, calling in a detective service and all that.
Why?
Well, Carmen came to my hotel about noon today. Can you imagine she's been looking for me?
Last night you said she didn't have an address.
Well, that was another silly thing. Only it was her mistake. She's not very good at details.
Where is she now?
Well, she's out buying a few things and packing. I've convinced her to come home with me.
All right. Now you want to know what I found?
Why on earth should I? I have my sister.
You were worried about a man named Chambers last night.
Carmen told me she hasn't seen him for months.
Did she tell you about her doctor?
No.
I met him. Only he said he never saw her.
Oh, is that so? Well, Mr. Regan, I do appreciate your services. Please thank Mr. Lyon for his kindness. I'm sorry I won't be able to see him.
Yeah, he's going to be sorry, too.
You'll give him this envelope. There's $100 in it.
You're paid up.
It's for all the unnecessary trouble I've caused you. And, Mr. Regan, it's all confidential.
You read the contract.
I wouldn't want any of this to get back to the wrong.
You know some of the wrong kind, do you?
Doesn't everyone? Thank you again. Bye.
Hello?
You run any expenses on this thing today?
No, I didn't.
Good. It's all over.
Isabel said she didn't see you.
There's a guy named Gallagher, a missing person. Got an eye like an eagle. He took one look at that snapshot and opened a file.
What kind of file?
Dead and unclaimed.
What do you mean?
Carmen Sanchez has been dead a year, and the county buried it.
Well, there are enough angles in this thing to write a new geometry book. Isabel Sanchez came to Los Angeles to find her sister, Carmen. She called in the Lion, who started me digging. A doctor named Menlo out in Encino used a milk bottle for a jigger. He was heavy on green stuff, but light on memory. He gave me nothing but an ice cube. His girlfriend, Vicky, was a little different. She gave me a warm glow, but I still drew a blank on the missing sister. Then Isabel walked into my place and said she found Carmen and called off the chase. That's about when the Lion rang and said that he'd found her, too, only his version was a little different. She was holding down a plot in the county cemetery, been dead a year. Well, I caught a cab and I went over to her hotel. A small man with a bald head opened the door and looked at me like I was trying to crash a coming-out party.
Yes?
I'm looking for Isabel Sanchez.
Are you a friend?
She won't think so.
She's not available.
All right, I'll wait.
What I mean is, could you come back later?
What's wrong with her now?
Well, you see...
All right, come on, Buster. Let's throw it in gear.
Are you a guest of the hotel?
No.
Well, could you please tell me the nature of your business?
I want to see Isabel.
I'm sorry. I can't let you in until you tell me who you are.
Regan, International Detective Bureau. She's a client.
Oh, come in. I'm Dr. Stanwyck, the house physician.
She need one?
Not anymore. Look for yourself.
Well, how long has she been this way?
2 hours, I'd say. Bellboy found her a few minutes ago. She drank a lot. Alcoholic poisoning.
Yeah.
Oh, Mr. Regan, when a thing like this occurs, naturally we don't like it to get around to the other guests. You'll use discretion, I presume.
I'll be as quiet as she is.
Thank you, Mr. Regan. We appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
The elevator's to your right.
I got a good memory.
Regan.
What are you doing here?
I've come to talk to our client.
You'll need a Ouija board.
What you mean?
She's dead.
Why'd you let that happen?
She wouldn't have done you any good.
What you talking about?
Yeah, all right. You go to Isabel. You say your sister's buried on the county, but it'll take a little cash to keep it out of the newspapers.
Not so loud.
Go back to your contest, Blank's Big Shot. That Sanchez name didn't come from Mexico and she wasn't rich.
You mean she's been lying?
I told you that yesterday.
All right, we'll close the Sanchez case.
Oh, no, we won't. It's still wide open.
But where you going?
To buy an Airwick. Well, I went down to the Hall of Records. The brown building off Temple. It leans over like an old lady with a short cane. I took the elevator upstairs and I walked down to vital statistics. The place was empty except for a guy sitting behind the desk. He had on a black suit with dust on his shoulders. His fingernails were dirty and he was reading a dictionary. He must have been at a good part because he looked mad when I nudged him.
We're not out of that. Quick, shove it.
I want some information.
That's what I'm here for. I'm a public servant.
Now, let's get to the death files, will you?
You're a morbid guy. You got a lot of stuff from births and marriages. Ask me something about that.
Carmen Sanchez died a year ago in August. Tell me what from.
Okay. How'd you spell it?
Just like it sounds.
Sanchez. 17. Fellas. Tanaki. Panther. That's what happened to old Sandy. No wonder I ain't seen him around.
Get to Sanchez.
All right. I got to Sanchez. Carmen. 22, date of death, 8/30/47. Alcoholic poisoning. She drank a lot.
Who signed the certificate?
P.E. Menlo, M.D.
Thanks.
Next time, make it something hard.
All right. Try this. Menlo's wife died about the same time.
Masters, Marie, Melbourne, Babbitt. Menlo. Sylvia, 34/9/2/47. Alcoholic poisoning.
Certification?
P.E. Menlo. That guy can't keep a patient.
Well, I left and I went back out into the street. It was almost 5 and the traffic was heavy. I started to cross the street to a sandwich shop on the corner. A yellow cab raced me to the sidewalk, but I won. I went inside and a skinny waitress with peanut-colored hair brought me a cup of stale coffee and a burnt hamburger. I sat there and I tried to figure it. It was like swimming through a tidal wave in hip boots. 3 deaths from the same thing and Menlo's name on every one of them. Well, the answers weren't in the coffee cup, so I went home, picked up my car, and drove out to Menlo's place in Encino. The drive was nice, and so was the reception.
I built a fire.
I forgot the marshmallows.
We'll think of something else. You know, I'm not mad anymore.
I'm still looking for your doctor.
Let me take care of it.
No, I want to see him.
He'll have to wait again.
When's he going to climb out of that bottle?
We had dinner at a place on Ventura. Paul found the bar. He'll stay till it closes.
I better go there.
Questions again?
Maybe.
I know some swell answers.
I bet you do.
I've worked for him a long time.
1 year.
How did you know? This is my night off.
You here all alone?
Isn't it terrible? Anything could happen. How do you like it?
Your way?
That's better. Now, let's have a nice, quiet evening. Just you and me. I had a feeling you'd be back.
That way you wore that?
Like it?
Well, you got talent, lady.
Discover me. It's been a famine of men like you.
You don't look underfed.
Why didn't I meet you sooner?
We didn't travel in the same crowd.
Let's start over.
Do you keep his files?
What's that got to do with us?
They'd never pass inspection.
Are you talking about something I should know?
Carmen Sanchez.
What about her?
She died. Menlo signed her death certificate.
Paul's lost a lot of patience. He's not very good. Did I tell you I played the piano?
He told me some other things.
Did I?
They make a good story.
I don't like stories.
Well, I'm going to tell you anyway.
I thought we were going to have a nice, quiet evening.
A girl walked in his office one day and dropped dead.
Good opening. Why'd she do that?
Alcoholic poisoning. She was a nobody named Carmen Sanchez.
Story's getting dull.
There was a snapshot in her pocketbook, not much else.
When does the action begin?
Right now, lady. The doctor's wife had an insurance policy. He convinced her to take a trip.
Why'd he want to do a thing like that?
So he could pull a name fix and collect his wife's insurance. He had a body.
No one will ever believe this plot.
He buried an empty box.
How do you know?
I'm going to have somebody dig it up.
What about the body?
He turned that over to the county.
Everybody lived happy ever after. Don't you like my music?
You're going to have to take up the harmonica, lady.
Why?
The gas chamber isn't big enough for a piano.
Who's going to the gas chamber?
You, maybe. An insurance fraud's one thing. Murder's a longer rap.
You haven't touched your drink.
I don't like mine that strong. Now, come on, lady. Get your coat.
Max!
I thought you were alone.
I lied.
Hello, Regan. You look excited.
He's tough, Matt.
Yeah, that's easy.
Soften him up.
Oh!
was in a white room when the trip ended. I tried to move my head, but it felt like a grand piano. So I just lay there. Pretty soon, somebody put something damp on my face, and I began to see things. Vicky was there, Max, so was Menlo. If I'd have had a deck of cards, we could have played a peanut game. Menlo looked kind of upset, like an ostrich with a sore throat. He had a needle in his hand.
I get the shakes.
You're all right, Paul. Now go ahead.
Just like Isabel, huh?
You should have stayed out, Regan.
Oh, I wanted one more look at you, baby.
I hate to see the nice ones go, but it'll all be over in a minute. All right, Paul.
Give me a drink, Vicky.
Never mind. Hurry up.
Let me have a drink.
Oh, you're too slow, Max.
Yeah?
Keep away from me, Max. I'll kill you.
Yeah.
Put down that
keep
gun.
Away from me or swear I'll kill you. I told you to keep away.
Menlo slugged for care of Max, but Vicky shot Menlo twice. And his knees knocked together. He began to pitch around like a toy balloon in a hurricane. He dropped his gun, but he held onto the needle. Then he slumped forward and made a grab for Vicky, and they both went down.
No,
he jammed
no,
the needle into her arm.
No.
Regan, come here.
The same stuff you used on Isabel?
Yeah. They'll call it alcoholic poison.
I'll straighten them out.
Regan, hold my head.
Yeah. Here. Give me five good reasons.
Five good reasons? I got Vicky. I'll never use a needle again.
You only gave me two. Well, we didn't hear from the suburbs, but there were enough ballots to make an election. Homicide got the insurance commissioner down there, and he threw in a vote. Seems that Isabel Sanchez was Menlo's wife, only her name was Sylvia. When a dame named Carmen Sanchez dropped dead in his office, Menlo got kind of ambitious. He talked his wife into the switch, and, well, everything might have worked out. Except one night when he was seeing elephants, he told Vicky the whole thing. She set the squeeze play with Max in the dugout. When Sylvia got back and saw how things were, she called herself Isabel Sanchez and went to the Lion with a story about a lost sister. I was hired for scare work, and when she figured they had enough, she called me off, but it didn't take. And you know the rest. Well, the insurance company issued a fee for exposing a defraud, and the Lion got his picture on page one. It was right next to Vicky's. She was wearing one of those French swimming suits. The Lion said, that'd do us a lot of good. It did. We each got a free bathing suit.
Jack Webb is featured as Jeff Regan with Herb Butterfield as Anthony J. Lyon.
Jeff Regan, investigator, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 16th of October, 1948 on CBS. This is an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And to radio listeners and critics in 1950, it actually wasn't a mystery what one of the top programs in that genre was, and that was Mr. Keen, Tracer of Lost Persons, on CBS Thursday nights at 8:30, drawing a shade under 18 million listeners a week. We hear an episode from that season now called The Case of the Rushville Murder from January 5th, 1950 on CBS.
Now for Mr. Keen and The Case of the Rushville Murder. Our scene opens in the home of Dr. Prentice, a well-known physician and psychiatrist who resides in the small New Jersey community of Rushville. The doctor's daughter, a tall, lovely young girl, is just reaching for the telephone, which has been ringing insistently, as if aware of the urgency of this particular call.
Hello?
Laura, this is Dad.
Oh, where are you, Father?
At the hospital, but I'm coming right home, Laura. After I hang up, be sure to shut and bolt all the doors and windows.
Why, what's happened, Dad?
One of my patients has just escaped from the hospital. She's a homicidal maniac, Laura, and extremely dangerous.
Father, there was something I wanted to tell you.
Oh, later, my dear. Right now, you do as I ask. This insane patient of mine is under the delusion that I'm her enemy, and she may head for the house immediately. I've already informed the police.
All right, Father.
And don't let anyone inside the house. I'll be home in 20 minutes. Goodbye, Laura.
Goodbye. There. I've shut and locked all the windows. Who's there? Oh, no. No, we're not going to... No. No, don't touch me. Put down that knife. No!
My daughter was found by the police 5 minutes after I had phoned her, Mr. Keene. She'd been stabbed to death with a kitchen knife.
Tell me, were all the windows and doors in your home locked, as you had asked, Dr. Prentice?
No, Mr. Keene. The windows were shut, but apparently Laura never had time to lock the back door that leads to the kitchen before Natalie Craven, the insane patient, reached the house.
Chance preserve us.
Well, Dr. Prentice, your insane patient seemed to head for your home immediately after escaping from the hospital.
Yes.
That's a little odd in itself.
But I told you how this patient felt about me, Mr. Keene. I'd treated her for a mental disorder for 2 years, but she developed a fixation about me and began to feel that I was her mortal enemy.
Well, you were devoting your time to bring her back to sanity.
Yes, Mr. Keene.
But what I meant, Dr. Prentice, was this. You were in the hospital at the time of the insane woman's escape. Now, if she wanted to murder you, why didn't she attack you after you left the building? Why did she come to your home instead and attack your daughter?
The mind of a psychiatric reacts in odd ways, Mr. Keene. This woman, Nettie Craven, may have thought I'd left the hospital. Then, finding I wasn't at home, she must have attacked my daughter, Laura, to revenge herself on me.
Oh, I see what you mean, Doctor.
Since the death of my wife, Mr. Keene, there have been only two things in my life. My work and my daughter, Laura. Laura is gone now. But I still have my work, and I intend to carry on.
Naturally.
I don't want Nettie Craven punished for the crime. She's completely insane. But she must be caught and returned to the hospital before she claims another victim.
You, for instance, Dr. Prentice?
No, I wasn't thinking of myself. I'm thinking of others. That's why I come to you, Mr. Keene. The police are on the case, of course. And if an investigator of your ability also enters it and works along with them, the woman will be captured all the sooner.
I intend to do everything I can, Dr. Prentice.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Keene. Needless to say, you'll be doing a great public service.
Yeah, but we're also thinking about you, Dr. Prentice.
Oh, please don't worry about me, Mr. Clancy.
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to do a little prescribing in this particular case, Dr. Prentice. Where is your home?
In New Jersey, a town called Rushville.
Well, Rushville is just across the river.
That's right, Mr. Clancy. Well,
Dr. Prentice, I'd like to exchange house keys with you. I'd like you to stay in my apartment until this case is over. And Mike and I will stay in your house.
But my work, Mr. Keene, my practice...
Well, it'll be better for you to miss a few days' work now, Doc, than to end up with no work at all.
You mean you think Nettie Craven will try to make me her next victim?
If this insane woman killed your daughter, yes. I insist that you take these precautions, Doctor.
Well, in that case, I'll do as you ask, Mr. Keene.
Fine.
And be careful yourself. I needn't remind you that a homicidal case like Nettie's is most dangerous.
Well, I'm aware of that, Dr. Prentice.
There's just one thing I'd like to add, Mr. Keene. If a young man named John Digby calls, try to break the news of Laura's murder as gently as possible. John is Laura's husband.
A husband, eh? Was he living in your home too, Doctor?
No. As a matter of fact, my daughter Laura had just come back to my house the day before. She and John were married only a month ago. They had a childish quarrel.
I see.
Oh, it was nothing at all, Mr. Keene. John's a fine boy, and I was certain I could have patched things up between them.
You tried to notify him of Laura's death, didn't you, Dr. Prentice?
Yes, but I couldn't reach him anywhere.
Very well, Dr. Prentice. You can proceed to my home immediately. I'll notify the hospital you won't be available for a few days. Meanwhile, Mike and I will bend every effort to put our hands on this Rushville murderer before another victim is added to the list.
Well, the light switch must be on this wall here, Mr. Keene, sir. Oh, here it is.
Well, Dr. Prentice seems to have a very comfortable home, Mike.
I'm sure, and it's too bad he lost his daughter. It's pretty tough for a man to go through something like that, Mr. Keene.
Yeah, he still has his work, and he's one of the best in the profession. If we can...
Boss, just a minute. I thought I heard someone move around in the next room.
You're right, Mike. There's someone here. Open that door.
I'd better have my gun handy, just in case.
Who are you?
Stand where you are, mister. Don't move.
What are you, thieves?
No, young man. We happen to be working with the police.
The police?
What are you doing here in Dr. Prentice's home?
Come to talk to my wife.
His wife? This must be young John Digby, boss. Laura's husband.
How did you know my name?
Your father-in-law, Dr. Prentice, told us about you, John. My name is Keene. This is my partner, Mike Clancy. May I ask how you got into this house?
Why, there was a kitchen window open. I didn't want to ring the front doorbell because I thought that Laura wouldn't let me in. We'd quarreled like a couple of silly kids, and she'd left me. I've come back to apologize to her.
Saints preserve us, but he hasn't even heard.
Heard what?
Sit down, John.
What is it? Why are you both looking at me like that?
Where have you been for the past 2 days?
I was so miserable after our quarrel. I went to a little town near Philadelphia.
That explains why you didn't learn of the tragedy.
What tragedy?
It's going to be a shock, John, so prepare yourself. Your wife, Laura, was murdered.
Laura murdered?
By a maniac.
No. No, I don't believe it.
It's true. And I'm sorry. One of your father-in-law's patients, an insane woman, escaped from the hospital. And they think she attacked your wife.
I should never have let Laura leave our apartment. It's all my fault, Mr. Keene.
Sometimes fate works out things in her own peculiar way, John.
And you think it was that maniac who killed Laura?
Well, that's the general opinion.
Well, it isn't my opinion.
What do you mean, John?
Mr. Keene, a few days ago, Laura was troubled by something important she wanted to tell her father. She started to tell me about it when I got home. But I interrupted her, and that's when we had our quarrel.
You don't know what it was that worried your wife?
I can guess. We fought because I was jealous, Mr. Keene. Jealous of a man named Arthur Halliday.
And who is he, John?
He used to be a medical student at the university in town. Dr. Prentice is a member of the examining board in that university. The board that passes on a student's character before he's permitted to graduate as a doctor.
Yes, go on.
Halliday drank a lot. Gambled. The examining board found out and dismissed him from the medical school. They decided he was too weak to accept the responsibility a doctor must take.
You say you were jealous of this Arthur Halliday?
Yes, Mr. Keene. He used to see a lot of Laura before we were married. The other day, I saw them together on the street. She never told me she was seeing him. Now it's beginning to be clear to me. Halliday was probably trying to use Laura's influence with her father to have himself reinstated at the medical school. She refused, and he made a threat. That's what she wanted to tell her father, Dr. Prentice, about.
Well, you don't mind my saying so, John. You're taking a lot for granted.
But it is worthwhile looking into, isn't it, Mr. Keene? If I ever find out that Arthur Halliday was responsible for Laura's death, I'll...
Well, you look a little pale, young fella.
News is too much of a shock for him, Mike. Would you like to lie down inside for a while, John?
Yes, sir. I think I'd better. I'll be all right, Mr. Keene. I just want to be alone for a few minutes.
I'll answer that, Mike.
Is Dr. Prentice in, please?
No, not at the moment.
My name is Maud Craven.
Craven? Mr. Keene, she must be related to that insane patient who escaped.
She's my sister, sir.
Come in, Miss Craven. My name is Keene. I happen to be looking for your sister.
Mr. Keene, the famous investigator? Oh, you won't put Nettie in prison, will you, sir? She doesn't realize what she's doing.
All I want is to return her to the hospital where she belongs.
I know they're looking for Nettie. They think she murdered the doctor's daughter, Laura. I came here to tell Dr. Prentice how unhappy it made me when I heard about what happened.
Do you know where your sister may have hidden, Miss Craven?
If I did, Mr. Keene, I'd call the hospital. I know how dangerous Nettie is. I don't want to give her the chance to do to someone else what she did to poor Miss Laura.
Excuse me for a moment, please. Hello?
Dr. Prentice?
He's not in at the moment. Who's calling, please?
Arthur Halliday. When will I be able to reach him?
Why, very shortly. Is it important?
I'll say it's important. To me, anyway. Who is this?
A friend of the doctor.
Well, you can give him this message. He's kicked me around long enough. Because of him, I can't get into a medical school in the country. And if he doesn't stop hounding me, I'll square accounts.
Hello. Hello, hello.
Who was that, Mr. Keene?
That was Arthur Halliday, Mike. A young medical student John Digby told us about. I wish I could have gotten his address.
But if he was a student in the town university, they can tell you where to reach him, Mr. Keene. If you want me to, I'll...
What is it, Miss Graydon?
The window.
Saints preserve us. There's someone outside, boss.
Yes, she's staring in the window.
Look at that face. She looks like an animal.
It's Nettie. It's my sister.
Grab her, Mike.
Mr. Keene.
Isn't she there?
There's no one in sight, sir. She's disappeared like a ghost, boss. It's too dark out here to see where she went.
She couldn't have gotten far, Mike. Something tells me she's still close by. Come on. We're going to search every inch of these grounds.
She was standing right over here, Mr. Keene, near this window.
Yes, she was, Mike, but I don't see any footprints.
It's starting to snow, boss.
Well, we'd better go back inside the house. Maybe Nettie Craven managed to slip away after all. Mike?
Yes, boss?
Come over here for a moment. Look at this.
Why, it's a pair of doors leading right into the ground.
No, it doesn't lead into the ground, Mike. It probably leads into the cellar of the house. Some of these old-fashioned houses have cellars built this way. See if you can open it, Mike.
Well, I'll try. No, it won't budge, Mr. Keene.
Nettie must have bolted it on the inside.
You think she's hiding in there?
Yes. By now, she must be somewhere inside the house, Mike. Here, let me have your handcuffs.
Here you are, Mr. Keene.
Put these handcuffs through the rings on the cellar doors. Lock them from the outside. There we are, Mike. Now, she won't be able to get out the way she came in. Now, let's go back inside the house and find her.
Mr. Keene, did you find my sister, Nettie?
Not yet, Miss Craven. We think she's got inside the house through the cellar.
She's in here?
Why, you're not afraid of your sister, are you?
I don't know, Mr. Keene. I used to be able to reason with Nettie, but lately she's been so violent.
You better stay right here in the living room while we make a search, Miss Craven. First, Mike, we'll phone the police in the hospital and tell them to send help.
Well, here's the telephone, boss. Funny.
What's the trouble, Mike?
It sounds like the phone is dead.
Just a minute. Let's see where the phone wire runs to. Goes to this wall and runs along the woodwork to the window. Open up the window, Mike.
Well, Mr. King, the phone wire has been pulled right out of the outside wall.
Mike, this window faces the side of the house where we saw Nettie Craven.
Well, then Nettie Craven must have pulled the phone wire out just before she went through the cellar doors, Mr. Keene.
There's a car coming down the driveway, Mike.
Well, he's not coming all the way, boss. He's stopping on top of that small hill where the driveway goes up and turns out to the main road.
That's peculiar.
Now he's put his headlights out.
Mike, search this house. See if you can find Nettie Craven. But be careful.
I will, Mr. Keene.
Get hold of John Digby to help you. I'm going outside again and see what our latest visitor is up to. Who's there?
Who are you? My name is Halliday.
Arthur Halliday, the medical student?
The ex-medical student. If it wasn't for Dr. Prentice, I might have been practicing now.
If your character had been what it should have, Dr. Prentice and the school board wouldn't have stood in your way.
You must be the man I talked to on the phone a few minutes ago.
That's right. My name is Keene.
Get out of my way. It's Prentice I want to see.
Now, just a moment. Do you happen to know that Dr. Prentice's daughter, Laura, has been murdered?
Laura? Murdered?
You didn't read about it in the papers?
I just got back from New Orleans. I tried to get into another medical school down there, but they wouldn't have me. That's Dr. Prentice's fault, too.
When a man has a bad reputation, it travels fast, Halliday.
I'm not asking you for your opinion, Keene. I asked Laura to help me, but she wouldn't. So I decided to take matters into my own hands. Now get out of my way before I shoot.
I had a feeling you were rather stealthy about your movements. Parking your car up there on the hill and sneaking down Dr. Prentice's driveway in the dark. That gun you have seems to bear me out.
I'm going to get square, see? Prentice is my enemy. And if it's the last thing I do...
Look out behind you, Halliday.
Don't try and trick me.
Your car, it's running wild.
What?
Jump, Halliday.
Ah!
over here on this couch, Mike.
Easy now.
His car rolled down the hill and smashed into the house after hitting Halliday. I don't think he's seriously injured, just stunned. I managed to push him partly out of the way.
Well, Mr. Keene, how could a man be dumb enough to park a car in a hill with his handbrake off?
The brake was on when I left it.
Did you hear what he said, boss?
Yes, Mike. That means someone deliberately released that handbrake, hoping the car would roll down and kill the two of us. Where are John Digby and Maud Craven?
Here I am, Mr. Keene. Oh, what's happened?
This man's been hurt, Miss Craven. Where have you been?
I heard a noise upstairs and I went up to investigate. I hoped that I might be able to reason with my sister Nettie and save you trouble, Mr. Keene.
You haven't left this house?
No, Mr. Keene.
Where's John Digby, Mike?
Well, he wasn't in that bedroom where he went to lie down, boss. So I started to search the house by myself. And just as I started down into the cellar, I heard the car crash and I ran up. Saints preserve us. What was that?
Mr. Keene, it sounded like my sister Nettie.
Sounds like an insane person, all right.
Enough to chill you to the marrow. Just listen to her.
It's coming from the cellar, Mike. Come on, let's get down there immediately.
Keene, stay where you are. For heaven's sake, don't move.
It's John Digby, boss.
Nettie Craven standing behind him, Mike, with an axe in her hand.
Yes, I'm Nettie Craven. Don't move, either of you.
Do as she says, Mr. Keene, or she'll bury that axe in the back of my head.
Nettie, why do you want to harm John Digby?
Who are you?
I'm a friend of yours, Nettie.
Are you?
Won't you put that axe down so we can talk?
I can talk with the axe in my hand. Where's Dr. Prentice?
He's not here, Nettie.
That's all they ever do is lie to me. Where is he?
I told you, Dr. Prentice is not here.
Tell him his patient here. Tell him the most beautiful patient he ever had is waiting for him.
She's as mad as a hatter, Mr. Keene.
Mad, am I? I'll show you who's mad!
Nettie, wait. I think you're very clever, Nettie.
Now, there's a man with sense.
How long have you been hiding here in Dr. Prentice's house?
None of your business.
You know that it's snowing very hard outside?
Snowing? Wasn't snowing when I came in.
Well, you'll need rubbers when you go home, or you'll catch a cold.
Yes, I will.
Wouldn't you like us to take you home in a car?
A big car?
A very big one. Where do you want us to take you?
I want to see Dr. Prentice.
Why?
I don't know. I had a reason. I forget it now.
Nettie, do you want that ride?
In the car?
Yes.
Yes, I'd love it.
Then put the axe down.
She dropped the axe. Grab her,
grab her. Let me handle this, John. Nettie, did you kill Dr. Prentice's daughter, Laura?
I never killed anyone.
But you once threatened Dr. Prentice, didn't you?
Nettie? Nettie, what are you doing down there? Maud! It's my sister, Maud. Oh, thank heaven you found her, Mr. Keene. Is everything all right?
Yes, Miss Craven. Mike, you have an extra pair of handcuffs, haven't you?
Oh, you're not going to handcuff my sister Nettie, are you?
No, I believe I can handle Nettie with a little psychology. We're going to handcuff you, Maud Craven.
Me?
Put them on her, Mike.
What for?
The murder of Laura Digby.
Oh, it's a lie!
A few moments ago, you told me you never left that living room, Maud Craven. Yet your shoes were wet, and I saw snowflakes in your hair. You were outside the house. And you released the handbrake in Arthur Halliday's car.
It was Nettie. She did it.
No, Maud. I know that your sister Nettie has been inside since it started snowing, because her shoes are dry. The one who released that car brake and tried to kill Halliday and me was the one who murdered Dr. Prentice's daughter, Laura.
You can't prove I did that.
No. Well, we'll see. There are fingerprints on that brake handle, no doubt. And I have a hunch they'll match with yours.
But I was wearing gloves.
Yes. Of course you were. However, that admission is all I need.
Oh, you tricked me. You tricked me, Mr. Keene, just now the way Dr. Prentice did.
How did he trick you?
I thought he was in love with me, but he was only leading me on.
I knew you fell for him, Maud. I knew it all the time. He used to be there when he came to see me at the hospital to talk to me. I could see it in your eyes. But he didn't fall for you.
That's right, Nettie. Stand up for him. One of the reasons I wanted to get rid of him was because of you. Don't you see, Nettie? Dr. Prentice was the one who said you were insane. He put you in that hospital. You know you hated him.
Mr. Keene, look at Maud Craven's eyes. She looks as crazy as her sister Nettie.
Yes, I know, John. It appears that both sisters are hopelessly insane.
You fool, you idiot. If you try to turn me in, you'll get what Laura got.
So that's why you murdered Laura. She must have found out about your mental condition and was going to tell her father.
Yes. That must have been why Laura was worried, Mr. Keene.
Exactly, John. Your wife, Laura, found out that Maud Craven was as insane as her sister. But before she could inform the doctor, Maud entered the house and killed her.
Is Maud coming with us now?
Yes, Nettie, she's coming with you. And she's going to stay with you in the mental hospital. Mark, I think we can take both of them away and consider the case of the Rushville murder as closed.
Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, on June 2 yesterday from the 5th of January, 1950 on CBS. And that does it for this hour of mystery on June 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.